The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Friday, everybody. Yay. Welcome to it. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com through the magic of digital audio on the other channels that carry us, including the Progressive Voices Network, where we're heard Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. It is Friday, and tomorrow is the big day, the big March for Our Lives Day. And I'm so proud of these kids that have put this all together. These are high school kids who did this on their own, and there's going to be, I'm going to guess, over a million people participating, not only in the United States, but around the world, in marches calling out the gun insanity. It's a wonderful thing. Somebody in the chat room just said, tomorrow I'm going to watch all the kids marching on TV. You can actually get out there here. Happy Friday, going to watch C-SPAN tomorrow to see the students protesting. Pisces Bobby, depending where you are, chances are pretty good there's a march near you. Could be a gathering at a park or a full-on march. You don't have to go to Washington, D.C. I mean, I can't get there. But here, well, in Parkland, at one of our local parks, there's going to be a big, I don't even know what to expect there. I just know that that Trails End Park in Parkland is the local sister march for the March for Our Lives, which is happening. The main site is in Washington, D.C. And yes, there'll be coverage all weekend long, I'm sure. Beginning tonight, certainly on your favorite local cable news channel, or I guess it's not local if it's a cable news channel. You know what I mean, because they're playing this up. But, you know, these kids are so inspirational. Just when I've just about given up, I get so down about the way the world is today. But I watch these kids and it gives me hope that, you know, if they can have an optimism about them and think things are going to be better in the future, then they give me a bit of that optimism as well. So I don't know which one is worse. I watched two things. One last night on CNN, I watched the Anderson Cooper interview with Karen McDougal, the Playboy playmate who says she had a 10-month affair with Donald Trump. It was pretty creepy. It was pretty, I needed a shower after I was done watching it. It was like, you know, the proverbial train wreck that you can't look away from, because it was a compelling interview. But this woman, I guess I feel sorry for her. So there was that. And then there was the bill signing, not a bill signing, veto, not a veto thing that happened about 1:30 this afternoon in the Roosevelt Room at the White House, where Trump finally didn't sign the omnibus bill, but said he signed it. Which one should we get into? I don't even know. Both of them are pretty... there you go. See, Pisces Bobby found it at 11 a.m. West High School in Salt Lake City. She's in a wheelchair. If there's no snow, she'll be there. There you go. You see, they're everywhere. People are going to be out by the thousands by the hundreds of thousands. So if you can get to a march, by all means do it. If not, join in spirit. All right. So which one do I get into? We have Digby coming up. All right, let's do this. So Trump, you know, last night at about 12:30 in the morning, the Senate passed the omnibus bill. The vote was, can I find it here somewhere? Oh, 65-32. So it had bipartisan support. It had, you know, it had something for everyone and something for everyone to hate. But it was a big $1.3 trillion spending bill to keep the government funded through September. So they don't have to keep doing these, you know, continuing resolutions. So the House passed it the night before, and the Senate passed it last night, with all indications being that that Trump was going to sign it today. And sure enough, this morning, right around 9 o'clock, he tweeted out a threat that maybe he wouldn't sign it after all. Let's see if I can pull up his threat here. He wrote, "I'm considering a veto of the omnibus spending bill based on the fact that 800,000 plus DACA recipients have been totally abandoned by the Democrats, not even mentioned in bill, and the border wall, which is desperately needed for a national defense, is not fully funded." No, not fully funded. In fact, there was $1.6 billion out of the $25 billion he asked for in the bill. And DACA was not addressed because the courts stepped in and said, you know, DACA is off the table for now. Trump had put an expiration date, if you will, of March 5th, I believe, until the courts intervened. And now I think what the Democrats are doing is waiting out the clock and hoping that there'll be a change in the makeup of Congress before they have to deal with DACA again. For now, the DACA recipients are safe. But so Trump goes into the Roosevelt Room at about 1:30 or so this afternoon and says this.
"As a matter of national security, I've signed this omnibus budget bill. There are a lot of things that I'm unhappy about in this bill.
Festivus.
There are a lot of things that we shouldn't have had in this bill, but we were, in a sense, forced, if we want to build our military, we were forced to have. There are some things that we should have in the bill. But I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever. President Obama signed one that was actually larger, which I'm sure he wasn't too happy with either. But in this case, it became so big because we need to take care of our military."
So he went on and on about the military. In fact, I'm going to jump around a little bit. Here he is talking about how we are now going to have the strongest military in the world.
"While we're very disappointed in the 1.3 trillion, nobody more disappointed than me because the number is so large. It'll start coming down. We had no choice but to fund our military because we have to have by far the strongest military in the world. And this will be by far the strongest military that we've ever had. So when you look at all of these pages, a lot of that is devoted, a lot, to the military."
Of course. He needs the strongest military in the world because he is the biggest warmonger in the world as his new national security advisor. We'll get into that with Digby today, the whole John Bolton thing, which if it doesn't already scare you, just wait. It should. But he went off on these weird tangents. He went off on a whole thing about trade. This had nothing to do with trade, but he let sleepy Wilbur Ross. Can we give Wilbur Ross a nickname? Wilbur, who was talking about trade with South Korea and how that's almost done. What? And then he let the new Kirstjen Nielsen, I think is her name, the new head of Homeland Security, speak about something. It was the most discombobulated little event they had there. He didn't even sign the bill in the room. Whether he did before or after is uncertain, but a news alert did come over that he has signed the bill, so it's there. But then he went off script again, and he said this.
We have to get rid of the filibuster rule.
Uh-oh.
We have to get rid of the filibuster rule and go to 51 votes in the Senate if we're going to have really sustained, continued success.
And you wonder why I'm so insistent that you vote Democratic when it comes to the general election. Why I talk all the time about the primaries and how important the primaries are, that we get real progressives in office, because primary season is our chance to do that. Once we get to the general election, you got to vote for the Democrat, because if the Republicans keep the Senate and he is able to get rid of the filibuster, we're all truly fucked and really not in a good way. Then he went off even further and called for a line item veto.
To prevent the omnibus situation from ever happening again, I'm calling on Congress to give me a line item veto for all government spending bills, and the Senate must end. They must end the filibuster rule and get down to work. We have to get a lot of great legislation approved. And without the filibuster rule, it'll happen just like magic.
Well, the filibuster rule, you know, if Mitch McConnell goes there, we're screwed. The line item veto is not going to happen. Others have tried it. It's been ruled unconstitutional. It will not happen. But it just shows how little Donald Trump knows. You know, if you wondered why his whole veto thing this morning, why this little dance, this little game he played, maybe it had to do with the interview on CNN yesterday. You know, as bad as you think of Donald Trump, and believe me, I hold him in very, very low esteem, he comes out even worse after hearing this interview with this Karen McDougal woman. Here's just a little taste of it in case you didn't hear it. Beware, you may feel like you need a shower after it's done too.
So what happened after you had been intimate?
Well, after we had been intimate, he tried to pay me. And I actually didn't know how to take that.
Did he actually try to hand you money?
He did. He did. And I said, I mean, I just had this look of, I don't know, just, I don't even know how to describe it. The look in my face must have been so sad, because
he meets this woman at a Playboy event. It was a golf tournament Playboy event, and he starts flirting with her, and they exchange phone numbers, and they talk for a week or so, and then he invites her to his hotel room, and they have dinner, and you know, come on over for dinner and sex. So she sleeps with him on the first date, right? And then he tries to pay her off, or not pay her off, pay her as if she's just a regular hooker.
Yeah. I had never been offered money like that before, number one. But number two, I thought, does he think that I'm in this for money, or why I'm here tonight, or is this a normal thing? I didn't know. But I looked at him and I said, that's not me. I'm not that kind of girl. And he said, you're really special. And I was thank you. So I left. I actually got into the car for Keith to take me home, and I started crying. I was really sad, and it really hurt me. But I went back.
Hurt you that he saw you in that way?
Yes.
She went back.
He saw me in that light, and he obviously assumed that that's the kind of girl I was. Maybe because I was a playmate, I don't know, but...
Even though you'd had a night of conversation and days of conversation, it hurt you that it boiled down in the end to that?
It did hurt me. It did hurt me. I was crying in the back seat of the car. Like I said, I got home and into my apartment, and I cried for a lot. I felt really terrible about myself.
And she should. Because she spent 10 months stripping this man. She even talked about going into their apartment at Trump Tower, knowing that he was married. I have no sympathy for the woman. And I really don't understand why she's coming forward now. There was no light shown on it for me from this interview. Like I said, I felt like I did need a shower afterwards. I took one. Ay, ay, ay. This is the world we live in, people. America, what have you done? What have you done? How did this man become president? What? How did we get in this mess? I don't have the answers. Maybe Digby does. We'll talk with Digby, Heather Digby Parton. You find her at digbysblog.blogspot.com and at salon.com. And here today, first, let's take a time out. We'll listen to What's News and come back with Digby next.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Thursday was a busy day in Washington, D.C.
The president fired his lead lawyer on the Russia scandal today. He then unexpectedly threw $50 billion of trade war tariffs at China. And then the Dow Jones fell off a cliff and the market dropped 742 points before closing. Secretary of State said goodbye and left his job. The president then hired yet another Fox News personality to join his Russia legal team. Then he hired another Fox News personality to become the new national security advisor, which means he is firing the existing national security advisor right now, which means just in the past 3 weeks, this president and this White House have chewed up and spat out the communications director, who is reportedly the president's single most trusted aide, Hope Hicks, also the president's personal assistant, also his staff secretary, also his chief economic advisor, also the deputy White House chief of staff, also the deputy director of the FBI, and the aforementioned secretary of state, who will be replaced now by the person who is currently serving as director of the CIA, which means there needs to be a new director of the CIA as well. And now tonight, the national security advisor is out too.
Yes, he did it again. This time, the president fired his national security advisor and announced his replacement via Twitter. He tweeted, "I am pleased to announce that, effective 4/9/18, Ambassador John Bolton will be my new national security advisor. I am very thankful for the service of General H.R. McMaster, who has done an outstanding job and will always remain my friend. There will be an official contact handover on 4/9. John Bolton is the former U.N. ambassador under George W. Bush, who was given that position in a recess appointment after saying the U.N. shouldn't exist. Here are some of his greatest hits.
There is no United Nations. The Secretariat building in New York has 38 stories. If you lost 10 stories today, it would make a bit of difference.
But our biggest national security crisis is Barack Obama.
We have to know the facts here, and it's not at all clear to me, just viewing this from the outside, that this hacking into the DNC and the RNC computers was not a false flag operation.
I think the only diplomatic option left is to end the regime in North Korea by effectively having the South take it over.
Bolton told Fox News that those comments are behind him now, that what matters is what the president thinks. Trump has signed an executive memorandum imposing about $60 billion in tariffs against China for stealing American companies' intellectual property. The White House claims that a Section 301 investigation in August and an interagency process determined that China engages in unfair trade practices, including forced technology transfers, strategic acquisitions of U.S. intellectual property, and cyber intrusions.
We have a trade deficit, depending on the way you calculate, of $504 billion. Now, some people would say it's really $375 billion. Many different ways of looking at it, but any way you look at it, it is the largest deficit of any country in the history of our world. It's out of control. In particular with China, we're going to be doing a Section 301 trade action. It could be about $60 billion, but that's really just a fraction of what we're talking about. I've been speaking with the highest Chinese representatives, including the president, and I've asked them to reduce the trade deficit immediately by $100 billion. It's a lot. So that would be anywhere from 25%, depending on the way you figure, to maybe something even more than that. But we have to do that. The word that I want to use is reciprocal. When they charge 25% for a car to go in, and we charge 2% for their car to come into the United States, that's not good. That's how China rebuilt itself. The tremendous money that we've paid since the founding of the World Trade Organization, which has actually been a disaster for us. It's been very unfair to us. The arbitrations are very unfair. The judging has been very unfair. And knowingly, we always have a minority, and it's not fair.
The Dow closed down over 720 points on Thursday in response. The Senate voted early Friday morning 65-32 to pass a $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill, sending it to the president. In an early morning tweet on Friday, Trump threatened a veto because DACA isn't addressed in the bill and the amount of money allocated for his border wall is much less than he asked for. Stay tuned. This is the weekend that hundreds of thousands of marchers are expected to participate in the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. and cities around the country and the world, calling for an end to the gun madness. The march has been organized by survivors of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in Parkland, Florida last month. I got the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
You're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B. Digby.
Yes, Digby is Heather Digby Parton. She blogs at digbysblog.blogspot.com and writes regularly for salon.com, where she has a piece up today arguing that in John Bolton, Trump has found his national security soulmate. Ew, I need a shower again. Hi, Digby.
Hi, Nicole. I hadn't thought of it that way, but now that you mention it.
Yeah, I was talking about the interview last night on CNN. I don't know if you saw it or not, with Karen McDougal, the Playboy. It was one of those train wrecks that she just couldn't look away from. You know, it was something quite compelling about it. But ew, it was, you know, you need a shower.
You know, this is something I just don't understand. Donald Trump, what woman could possibly be attracted to that guy? I mean, I guess that you know, if there's some kind of pecuniary interest, one can kind of understand it. But that woman seemed to really like him.
I know.
I mean, love him. I was just astonished. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I'd say, are you kidding? Have you looked at him? Do you have problems? I mean, what is going on here?
She voted for him. I mean, I don't get it. Before we get into things more, you know, serious, I'm wondering, with this rash of the three women now that have come forward, between Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels and Summer Zervos, do you think it's the women that can bring him down, that they can actually do real damage? If this was any other president, this would be front page stuff.
Oh, of course it would. I think it would have already, you know, caused him, you know, whoever the president was. There'd be hearings. There'd be all kinds of, you know, special counsels and what have you. But with Trump, there's just so much. To your question, yeah, I do think so. There are a couple of reasons why I think they could be a very serious problem for him. The first is, you know, you just have to ask yourself why he has fought Stormy Daniels as hard as he has, why he still has them out there. Because, you know, everybody says, this is all baked in. We knew what he was. They voted for him anyway. You know, it's not that big of a deal. Well, it is to him, clearly, because he could have blown it off and said, look, she's a money grubber. You know, she's just looking for whatever, and let that go. And he could have even done during my marriage, I haven't been perfect, but, you know, Melania and I are very happy now. And, you know, everybody would have just gone, okay, fine, there's so much other stuff going on that I think that probably could have been overlooked when it comes to Donald Trump, obviously. I mean, we saw him on tape before the election saying that he, you know, routinely assaulted women and there was nothing they could do about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something here. And, you know, I put up a post earlier that, you know, one thing people should remember about Stormy Daniels, her in particular, She's a film director. She's been directing movies since 2004. That's 2 years before she got together with Trump. She's directed 78 adult films.
Wow.
I mean, this is a woman who knows her way around a camera. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows? I have no evidence other than, you know, I don't know if you saw the tweet this morning by her attorney who tweeted out a picture of a DVD.
A disc, right. I did see that.
So, you know, I don't know what that means. This could all just be some kind of a, you know, a shakedown. I don't know. But there is a reason why Trump has fought this to the extent he has with her. But then on a more serious note, you know, beyond just the sort of salacious side of this, you know, women are sick of this guy. And, you know, it's true that 52% of white women voted for him in the 2016 election. But nonetheless, the gender gap was gigantic, bigger than it's ever been,
mm-hmm.
For voting for Hillary Clinton across the board, including among white women. There were far more white women who voted for her than had voted for anybody before, any Democrat before, since they've been doing polling. However, the polling recently is showing some real shifts in that, even among the white working class women. And particularly among women across the board of the millennial years, 70% of millennial women are now identifying as Democrats in the most recent polling.
Wow.
That's huge. I mean, it's a gigantic leap from 2016. I mean, young women are really appalled and disgusted by this guy. Now, of course, depending on how, you know, what kind of turnout there is and all the other yada, yada, yada about the coming election, including all the reports that we've had of women organizing in the cities, and African American women doing their usual kind of, you know, yeoman's work, and a lot of white college educated women in the suburbs. I honestly think that somewhere along the line, you know, Trump, he is beyond what any of us might think. Well, you know, men are men, you know how they are. I mean, this guy was, you know, he was having affairs with porn stars.
Yep.
He, you know, this is a guy who assaults women routinely. And there have been almost 20 who've come out and accused him of it. He's having affairs with Playboy Playmates when his wife has, you know, a tiny baby at home. I mean, he's taken this idea of, you know, well, men are pigs, and taken it to Harvey Weinstein level. And I think that somewhere along the line, I mean, there will always be some women who vote for him anyway. He has a cult following, many of whom are women that will never, you know, never admit that there's anything wrong with the guy. But I think that a lot of women are on a really visceral level absolutely repulsed by this guy. And interestingly enough, in the polling, men, not so much. Their views have not changed.
That's amazing.
Even the millennial men, not even 50% of them disapprove of Donald Trump. So,
wow.
You know.
Wow.
I know. That's kind of scary, isn't it? But, you know, hey, got to fight for what's right here. You know, there are plenty of good men out there who are on the right side, and there are a lot of really, really pissed off women. So hopefully that translates into some kind of electoral wave in November.
I hope so. Well, your Blue America colleague, Howie Klein, thinks there's a big wave coming.
Yep.
You agree with him?
I do. And, you know, I mean, I don't ever want to get too optimistic about anything mm-hmm. anymore because, you know, the world has gone crazy. But everything points that way. And, you know, I have to believe that there is a sense among sensible people in this country that there has to be some kind of a roadblock put up to stop this guy, to the extent it's even possible. I mean, he's got a tremendous amount of power, and he now recognizes that he has that power, and he's starting to use it. So it is very, very, it's going to be very difficult to stop him. But it's the only real lever that is out there for us to, as citizens, to use. And, you know, I do think, based upon everything we've seen so far, that the there's going to be a big wave. And I think that there's a great likelihood they're going to take one House of Congress, which is the minimum. You know, they got to get one. And that's going to be, you know, hopefully the House. Well, we can send Paul Ryan packing.
That's why I talk about, well, hopefully he's not even going to run. There's that possibility. But that's why I talk about the importance of the primary season all the time, because we've got some pretty bad Democratic candidates. But when it comes down to it, whoever that candidate winds up being in November is the one you got to vote for, because we got to get at least the House out of the hands of the Republicans if we want to do anything. Did you watch this dog and pony show he held this afternoon? The signing of the omnibus bill where he didn't actually sign it, but he's calling for the elimination of the filibuster rule. Can you imagine if he gets that? Then, I mean, as screwed as we are now, then I don't even want to think of what happens next.
Well, I mean, I will not be surprised to see that happen, and worse. I mean, you know, the guy is he's in a manic phase. I almost think maybe it might even be some kind of clinical thing, because this behavior of his, which has been coming on for the past month, and there are a lot of reasons why that might be so, including Stormy Daniels. But also, I think that, you know, he's feeling the stress of the Mueller investigation. I think he's sensing that he's frustrated that he has not been able to gain the approval of more people in the country, and that there's this tremendous hostility toward him. So, you know, he's definitely in a manic phase, and he's deciding that the best thing for him to do is to just do it his way, that all the Washington people don't know what they're talking about. He knows how to do things, and he's going to do it his way, which is, you know, a disaster. So, you know, when he signed the omnibus bill, he does have kind of a feral instinct for certain things that you have to give him credit for. And one thing he understands is that, and this comes from just watching Laura Ingraham scream about the deficit and about the wall on Fox, is that he gets that by signing this bill, which actually in terms of, you know, many of the programs that are in there, the Democrats got a lot more than one might have expected. That, I mean, I was a little bit surprised to see it. And of course, on the other side, they got this massive military, expansion of the military budget.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that Republicans always do, and this is just standard, this is nothing unique about Trump. It has been, Ronald Reagan did it, both Bushes did it. Go ahead and bust the budget when they're in office, and it makes everybody feel prosperous and people are happy, and they're going, wow, you know, you've got government is doing what it should be doing, right? You know, it's spending money, it's getting money into the hands of average people, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, their regulatory scheme, which is just laissez-faire, take the gloves off, let them do whatever they want, that inevitably crashes the economy, right? I mean, that's just what happens. Things go belly up. They lose power, and at that point, then they turn around and blame the Democrats for people's misery, and then rinse and repeat. This just happens over and over again, and that's what's happening now. So Trump is happy to sign a bill that's going to make everybody feel prosperous and good in the short run, and then when the whole thing crashes, he can blame the Democrats when they come into Congress and say, look at them, they're spending, you know, into oblivion. He can become a deficit hawk. Meanwhile, he gets the benefit, but he also gets to blame the Democrats. And so, you know, this is a very cynical move, nothing unique to Trump. It's just the way that it is. And I think he just kind of instinctively gets that, you know, how to take credit, but also lay the groundwork for blaming others. That's pretty much what he does in life, generally.
Oh, sure. Sure. But he was particularly, I think manic is a good descriptor of the what he was putting out there this morning. There was
there's
a mania.
There's something wrong with him, don't you think?
I mean, without a doubt.
It doesn't seem like there's something wrong with him. I mean, beyond what's normally wrong with him, I mean, it just seems to be a different level of wrongness?
Yes. Well, from the first of all, the tweet that came at about 9 o'clock in the morning saying that he's thinking about vetoing it after mm-hmm. he had already given reportedly assurances that he was going to sign the thing. And then you got to wonder about the people around him. Don't they realize there's something wrong with this man? Obviously, Wilbur Ross and Kirstjen Nielsen, they were ready with some prepared statements that had nothing to do with what he was there to talk about.
Yep.
So they knew that he was going to call on them. I mean, what are they thinking? Aren't they just going, where is this man taking us?
I wish I knew. You know, I really wish, I would love, well, we'll know it someday if we survive, what they were thinking. They'll all write books and, you know, give interviews and what have you. And you know, probably most of them will just say, well, you know, we believe that, you know, Trump had good ideas. No, he'll have loyalists. I mean, even Nixon had loyalists, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that never went away. But I do not understand this. I mean, I really don't. And the truth is that a lot of them clearly are, you know, shocked and stunned by what they're seeing because they're leaving. I mean, even Hope Hicks.
Yep.
And now we hear today, I just read in Politico, that Don McGahn, the White House counsel, wants to get out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he's been with Trump since the campaign.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, I think there are plenty of rats deserting the sinking ship. And, of course, you know, and Trump is now talking about, I mean, this is really crazy stuff. No chief of staff. He's just going to run things from the Oval Office.
Or have,
I mean, have
four co-equal people all reporting to him.
So smart, he can figure it out. He doesn't need anybody to, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, my God.
It really is. It's frightening. And then to ratchet up the terror a little bit higher comes what I mentioned when I first brought you on. He brings in John Bolton as his national security advisor. John Bolton, the man, if we could point to one person who maybe is most responsible for getting us into Iraq, who still thinks the Iraq war was a great idea, that's John Bolton. This is frightening for a whole number of reasons.
It's terrifying because John Bolton, I mean, look, first of all, John Bolton's actually fairly competent at being a lunatic. In other words, he has government experience in a way that a lot of these, you know, even, you know, the Mike Flynn or McMaster in the same position didn't really understand in the same way that John Bolton does. But he and Trump are on the same page. I mean, I think this is one of the things that has driven me the most crazy about the Trump phenomenon, is that I don't think, you know, people like to talk about him like he's some kind of an isolationist because he used the term America first and he says he doesn't want to pay for, you know, the global military empire, et cetera. But the truth is that America first to him doesn't mean isolationism in the way that those of us who know a little history think of it. You know, it's not like, you know, the ghost of Taft isn't wandering around the White House. America first to him means we're number one.
Right.
Which is a totally different thing.
I picture the big foam finger, you know, in the sports stand sticking up.
That's exactly right. That's what he means by that.
Yeah.
And what he means by that is that America, which should dominate the world militarily and economically, and all of that will be guaranteed by this massive military that he wants to build up beyond even what it already is, which is already incredibly massive, and we own half the world,
right.
And certainly are the global, you know, security guarantor. Well, John Bolton also believes that, and he has believed this for a very long time. Going back to the 90s, Bolton has been around, and like you said, he was one of the primary, pushers of the Iraq War, if you will. But going all the way back to the 90s, I mean, he just says it outright. He has never tried to hide it. America dominates the world. There should be no United Nations because the only country that matters is the United States. We run things. It is our prerogative to do whatever we want because we're the most powerful nation on earth. He has in recent years, you know, said that Israel should drop a nuclear bomb on
mm-hmm.
Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, he said there should be an invasion and regime change in Iran. same thing with North Korea.
Yep.
Now, by saying this stuff and coming onto the Trump administration in the midst of this very tense standoff with North Korea and whatever's going on with these talks, what Bolton has done and what Trump has done by bringing Bolton on is basically told Kim Jong-un that we're for regime change. Bolton has said that outright. We want regime change. Now, that is that's like waving a red cape in front of a bull, because that is the one thing that Kim Jong-un is most afraid of, right, is being deposed. So, you know, I never had any hopes for these quick talks. I figured it would never happen anyway. But now I think it's really, by bringing Bolton in, it's escalated. And he and Trump are really on the same page there. What they believe is America first, meaning we're number one. Global domination. We are the ones who decide. We're the deciders.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, Bolton was affiliated with the neocon crowd, and he mm-hmm. was. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He was a member of the PNAC, and, you know, he was part of that whole cabal. But he was different in the sense that he never even gave lip service to the kumbaya, we're spreading democracy and freedom, and we're going to the Pax Americana, world global peace, and all that, you know, nonsense that those people were spreading. He never believed that, and he never said it. With him, it's just pure dominance. You know, it's just, we're going to run the world. We run it. We own it. You're going to do what we say. And I think that is exactly what Trump wants to hear. And that is just terrifying, because he doesn't know. And I don't think he'll listen to anybody anymore. I think Trump is just saying, say what I want to hear or get out of my office. I don't want to hear it.
And that's what's so frightening. And it's a bit schizophrenic, too, because, mm-hmm. you know, he said he wants to meet with Kim Jong-un. Obviously, he said he wants to do it with the goal of denuclearizing North Korea, which, of course, Kim is never going to go along with. But you have John Bolton saying that we should nuke them. We should do a first strike nuke against them.
Yeah.
I don't see how the two can mesh.
They don't mesh. You know, I mean, I think, you know, Trump does have, you know, on the one hand, he has an outsized faith in his own abilities to negotiate, charm, do whatever.
Anything,
I mean, he really thinks that when he went to China, that he charmed Xi and that, you know, he's really got him, you know, wrapped around his little finger, you know. I mean, it's the opposite, of course. I mean, all you have to do is flatter the guy, tell him you like his hair, or mm-hmm. say, compliment him on the side of his hands, and he's, you know, he's yours. But he, you know, I think that he may believe that he can walk into a room with Kim Jong-un and basically talk him into capitulating and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, resigning. And maybe he thinks he can do that. I don't know. But I don't think Bolton thinks that. I think Bolton knows very well. And in fact, Bolton has said explicitly, it's a good idea to say you're going to talk to them so that when the talks don't work, you've got an excuse for a preemptive strike.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's his logic.
It is truly frightening. I mean, it leaves me speechless. Where do we go from here? The thought of the fact that we have close to another 3 years of this at a minimum is truly frightening, which leads me to the next question. Is Robert Mueller here? Will he save us, or will they take him down?
Well, you know, I don't know how it can work, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's important for the public record to know what has happened with the last election, to understand the way the Russian interference worked, and potentially to expose Donald Trump and his cronies for what they are, and everything from money laundering to, you know, collusion in the campaign. All that stuff is important, but I honestly don't know how it makes a difference, because the only way that this could work would be if the Congress were to impeach the president. I mean, they can try and bring charges against Trump, but I just, in this environment, does anybody really think that, I mean, the right wing will go completely crazy if they do that? And I just don't see how that works. I mean, the only thing I can think, you know, to me, the problem, and it isn't even Trump at this point, it's the Republicans in the Congress mm-hmm. and the Republicans in this country who basically just, they don't care. I mean, they're fine with whatever this guy does. And I'm hard-pressed. The only thing I can think of, to me, I think it's more likely that if Stormy has film of Trump getting spanked with Forbes magazine or wearing a diaper or something, that might do it. But I'm not even sure about that.
No, they'll make excuses for him.
Well, they'll say it's fake, right?
Of course.
Oh, it's fake. Fake news. I mean, that's the new thing that gives him power is this idea that just sort of he can tell his followers that it's, you know, whatever Mueller comes up with, it's all a frame job. You know, they were doing it, the deep state and all this other stuff. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, if Mueller will save us, I don't know. Now, there are some things that Trump might be afraid of with him. I mean, he clearly does not want him going anywhere near his finances. And that may be more because he's worried about actually losing money. You know what I mean? And I mean, it may be that is something that has him a little bit spooked. But, you know, I think he's going to fire the guy anyway. I mean, don't you? I mean, is he going to just let this go on?
I don't know. And you know, you hear him say, and you hear all the protestations coming out of the White House saying that, you know, there's no talk of firing Mueller. But then again, it was just a couple of days ago, McMaster is safe. He's
right.
Going to be around for a long time. Well,
Tillerson loved the guy. He's
right.
A great guy, you know, and then they fire him. I know. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell the future. I don't know whether or not he will finally pull the trigger. But again, remember, he's in this manic state, right?
Yeah.
He's feeling the power. You know, for the last year, everybody's been telling me, oh, you can't do this because then there'll be horrible consequences. Don't do it. And he's done things and nothing happens. So he's learning. I mean, I don't think he's learned the job of governing. He doesn't know anything. He won't even read his briefing, you know, flashcards. But he is learning that all the things people say will happen to him if he does certain things don't happen.
Right.
And that's because the Republicans, and by the way, you know, just in slight defense of Republicans, and I don't want to defend them because I think that they are betraying the country by allowing this to happen and going along with it. But Bob Corker said something the other day that I thought was really interesting. He said that in talking to his colleagues, and these would be Senate colleagues, when they're out on the trail, Their voters, the only thing they're asking are you with Trump or are you against him?
Wow.
That's the only thing they care about. They don't care. I mean, literally nothing else matters. So what you have now is this cult of personality, and these people have bought into it, and they are, you know, and you know how, I mean, you know, I've talked about this for years, right, Nicole, that you know, there's this victimization thing, this persecution complex that they have on the right where they're always beleaguered and they're, you know, no matter how much power they have, it's, you know, they're always being persecuted. I think that, you know, Trump has a way of expressing that, you know, it's unfair. It's, you know, he whines. To me, it sounds like whining, but to them, it's expressing their feeling of being besieged. And so the more he does that, the more they kind of buy into him. And so there's this kind of impenetrable wall of Trump supporters, and they're authoritarians, and they're very, very, you know, simple sort of, they just have bought into whatever he does. And I think that these senators are, you know, that's what they're facing with their voters, and it scares them. Now, I'm not excusing them. Again, they have an obligation. They took an oath to the Constitution. There's more to this than just, you know, if you're not willing to risk your seat in order to stop this, you know, demagogic cretin, then you're a worthless legislator, you're
right.
A worthless official, you
I
know.
Agree.
But, you know, that's, I think that is their reasoning. The problem isn't just Trump, it's his people, and there are tens of millions of them. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, they are,
it's,
you know,
it's
they're
a cult.
Authoritarian.
Right. And it's his cult of followers who watched him for years on TV, and they believe the act that the guy that was on The Apprentice is really, that's him. And they believe the bullshit that he was actually a successful businessman rather than a guy who went bankrupt so many times. And he's been allowed to just lie. And something that he's told people throughout the years, you just lie to people, they believe you.
Yeah.
And it's playing out every day. And the thing is, if you know, say, you know, Democrats take back the House of Representatives and are able to, you know, come up with something impeachable, he'd still have to get through the Senate, and the Senate would never vote to convict him. So we'd still be stuck with him in there, probably even in a more manic state because he'd been impeached by the House.
Imagine what he does under that. Under those conditions. I mean, that's part of the phenomenon, too, is everybody's kind of walking around going, geez, you know, should we get him mad or should we, you know, give him what he wants and should we give him a little bit and can we manipulate him? And, you know, and one of the things that I had been for months sort of saying that, you know, the strange thing about these scandals, the Russia scandal and, you know, all the other, I mean, there's a lot more now that we know about, too, from, you know, Jared in the Middle East and, you know, I mean, some crazy stuff going on there, that, you know, in a normal Congress, there would be public hearings. That's one of the ways that this has always been done. It's always been done. Now, at Benghazi, they had public hearings every 5 minutes in, you know, in all the committee investigations, but no public hearings. I mean, the last thing we saw was, I mean, every once in a while, one of the officials has to come up to the Hill and talk about the budget, and they get asked about, you know, something like Admiral Rogers or somebody like that. But there's been nothing, you know, we haven't had Jared up there. There hasn't been, you know, Don Jr. hasn't been up there. They haven't had the Russians at the meeting up there. I mean, that's what normally what you'd see, right?
Right.
So they're not doing this. And I kept thinking, well, maybe, you know, if the Democrats take over, maybe we'll have public hearings and that will, you know, sort of dramatize this for the people and they'll understand that the level, the vast layers of corruption. I mean, and that's a huge story that people aren't even bothering with anymore. I mean, the Trump family is making vast sums of money off of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I realize, you know, we know all this. It's not, I mean, that his administration leaks more than any administration in history. There, all these people are talking. The press knows all this stuff. It's like, it's you know, talk about transparency. It's pretty much out there. And yet this solid block of voters just stick with it. And I think that's where we're getting to the point where we're talking about, you know, how effective this propaganda line about fake news and everything we know. And we, you and I haven't even talked about what has happened to Fox, which is truly astonishing. It is full-time Trump state TV.
Right.
Now, it makes RT look like, you know, Edward R. Murrow by comparison. And, you know, that has had a huge effect as well because, you know, under Roger Ailes, you know, whatever, you know, he was a horrible, despicable propagandist, but he understood that there was some value or thought there was some value in being perceived as a, you know, his tagline was fair and balanced.
Right.
So he perceived that there was something that's gone now, completely gone.
Oh, really?
And it is a full-blown Trump propaganda network. So no matter what happens, people who follow Fox and follow the right-wing media, you know, ecosystem, they just won't believe it, even if something does, even if they have public hearings.
Right.
They'll think it was fake.
It is this opposite world
that's
the way I describe it. I've been describing it that way for a long time, but it's opposite world on steroids now. And not only do we have Fox, but now Sinclair is coming up in the world.
Yes.
And they're like Fox on steroids because what they do is even more nefarious in that they take these local news anchors and they're making them read these scripts. That the same script goes to every market, but it's the local anchor, the trusted local personality that is reading this stuff that's blatantly false, that's so pro-Trump. It's taking Fox to a whole new level. And meanwhile, there's no progressive media infrastructure, even though we hear about the liberal media all the time. This is the gaslighting of America through the media with the whole fake news nonsense.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about Sinclair, I think one of the things that's really very worrying about that particular thing is that a lot of people who don't, you know, people who watch Fox, they're political junkies, right? You're not going to watch Sean Hannity if you're just some disinterested person.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of TV out there. You're not going to watch that bozo unless you have some reason to do it. But the local stations and the local news stations, a lot of people just watch that because they think it's straight news. I mean, they're not looking for a partisan take.
Right.
They're not looking for politics particularly. They're looking for just, this is what's happening in my world, and you're watching what's the weather going to be like tomorrow for my commute, et cetera, et cetera. And they see this stuff, and they literally do not know that they're being propagandized. And, you know, I mean, it's they are seeing this as being sort of, it's the way you see online where you have these stories that look like they're stories from the website, but it's actually a paid ad.
Uh-huh.
It's that same kind of concept of fooling people into thinking that they're seeing something that has been legitimized as a real news story, and it isn't. And, you know, that gets into this whole, the way, you know, Cambridge Analytica and all of that manipulated the news during the election, and it's probably going to get a lot worse. That, you know, it's becoming very difficult for anyone who doesn't live this stuff the way you and I do, and probably most people listening to this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're news junkies, we're political people, we're tuned in, and we may be able to sort out the real from the unreal, but for an awful lot of people, you know, they're busy. They've got lives. They've got
right.
other things to do. And they are the ones that are being sort of drawn into this stuff without realizing it. And so kind of they're getting indoctrinated into
right.
certain ways of thinking. And
because they're being,
you know,
they're being presented
scary.
With opinion stuff as if it were fact. You know,
yeah.
that used to be the difference. Fox could get away with it because they're on cable and not under the auspices of the FCC. Local broadcast television, though, is. But now we have an FCC under Republican mm-hmm. rule who doesn't give a shit.
Oh, I don't think they don't give a shit. I think they're actively
working in favor
promoting
of
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't give a shit what the law is supposed to be.
Yeah,
They're
all for it, and they're backing Sinclair, and they're giving Sinclair. And, you know, I mean, this is happening all over the place. You know, this is the deep pockets, rich wingnut
yep.
people have discovered new ways of promoting their interests. And a lot of them, you know, this is an interesting sort of a, you know, just sort of a, you know, an aside, but why are so many of these deep pockets rich people just, you know, batshit crazy? I mean, Robert Mercer is nuts.
Yes.
And his daughter is too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get, you know, he's a quant who made his money in, you know, big, you know, data computing. And so, you know, he is one of those people who doesn't really know much about anything other than what he knew about and got into politics sort of from a sideways perspective. And he's a conspiracy theorist. He's, you know, backs all kinds of crazy stuff. But, you know, this is the weird thing, is that there's something about a certain kind of rich person that decides that they want to spend money specifically on politics. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of rich people that come from the other side of that who want to do the same thing. So it's an uneven playing field. Because, you know, if a rich liberal, I mean, there are some. I mean,
yes,
Tom Steyer, I think, is one.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, that's the one name, right,
right.
that we bring up. There, that's Tom Steyer. But, you know, why aren't there more Tom Steyers that are, you know, that are funding politics? And I'm not talking about causes. Everybody has their causes.
Mm-hmm.
I spend money on, you know, animal welfare and Planned Parenthood and a lot of things. But, you know, politics is politics. That's a different thing. And you just don't see very many wealthy liberals putting their money into explicitly political projects like that. And, I don't think we should have to rely on rich people, but, you know, would be helpful.
Right, but the question,
the money.
And the question I'll end on, and there's no real answer for it, is there any way back to normal? Can we ever recover from this, or have we gone too far over the deep end?
I don't know. You know, Nicole, it seems to me like this is all part, it's a continuum, and this goes back, you know, all the way back into the 90s with the impeachment and the crazy kind of, you know, radicalization of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party's, you know, at first their sort of complicity in it and going along with it, and then later choosing to ignore it. And, you know, Barack Obama's famous, I don't want to look in the rearview mirror.
Yep, yep.
All of that, you know, when we look back on this historically, we will see that Trump is not an anomaly. He is a natural result of a series of events that brought us to this place. So, you know, normal, I'm not sure we're going to have to go back a long way to get to normal. It may even go back as far as Nixon and the pardon and the fact that he was allowed to escape any kind of accountability for that. So I don't know. I do know that this idea of, you know, this normalization of crazy is now on steroids with Trump. It has come to a point where it's just absolutely out of control. And I feel the normalization happening every day, not from people like you and me. We know what we're up against. We understand it. And there are a lot of people getting ready to vote out there. The women are pissed.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this sense, I think, that what we used to think was completely couldn't happen, we're now seeing can happen. And that's how normalization unfolds, is that you start to realize, geez, you know, I didn't think, you know, they won't let this happen, whoever that they
right.
is.
And
now we discover there is no they.
There's no they. All right. Digby, we're just out of time. Thank you so much, Digby,
oh,
everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great weekend, everyone.